Welcome one and all to the Track One Side One podcast. This week's guest is the insanely talented musician who's presently going under the name of Old Man Boom. It's Mark Williams, and I've known Mark for many, many years. We've played in a few bands together, and he has some great stories to tell and five amazing songs put down on the table to dissect and discuss. So please enjoy this week's episode. And as ever, I'll speak to you at the end. Cheers.
I feel kind of basic today. Top five side ones. Track ones.
You are listening to the Track One Side One podcast with me, your host, Gaz Jones. The greatest. Each week, a guest picks their five favorite album opening tracks, and we dissect, discuss, and debate each one. So let's put on our classics and have a little chat then, shall we? Okay, we are live. Sat in front of me on my laptop screen by the medium of Skype, and that there interweb thingy is Boomer, aka Mark Williams. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Before we start, mate, I was wondering how hard was it just getting it down to five songs?
Oh, Christ. It was so hard. What I would have liked is to have it sort of split by genre. So if I could have had, can you just give me your top five track one side ones of the metal genre or of rap music? Because then I would have had some hope of doing it. Because I envy, in a way, just for this category, just for doing this, is people who just like one thing. Like, yeah. I just like thrash. That must be so much easier for you.
Track one, what do you want to talk about?
Okay, so it's a fairly modern list, actually. One thing I've done, I sort of deliberately have not picked all the really obvious big classics, because I figured that everyone else on your show might have already done that. So let's start off with not a long song, and also a classic, and my most obvious one, and the most obvious pick for a top five track one side ones. 1968, Glen Campbell with Wichita Lineman. I mean, as much as I was trying not to go for anything obvious, I couldn't not put it on there. It's just one of the greatest songs ever written. It's amazing. It's one of those where I've never been bored of hearing it. There's never been a time when there would be, like, if someone were to say, like, oh, do you want to listen to Wichita Lineman? I'd be like, no, that's never going to happen. Good, bad, happy, sad, whatever your mood is, Wichita Lineman is there for you. It's one of those ones, it's kind of like, it can be like a song that will, like, fill you with kind of like feel goodness when you just, like, really dive into it, just, like, really just enjoy everything in it. Or it can sound like quite a solitary, kind of like lonely songs. It's just one guy going along the highways fixing phone lines.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. It covers so many different moods. I always kind of draw on the solitary kind of loneliness of it. It's a perfect song, but the part of the song that still kills me every time I listen to it, and it did today when I listened to it, it's the Hammond organ chords at the end of each chorus. It's almost like Morse code.
It's amazing. It's like just the thing, like the string section in it. I think that's one of the things that kind of makes it sound so beautiful is the strings with it as well. And then you got that nice, like, slap back country guitar solo on it as well, which does nothing spectacular or inventive. No. It just does what the song needs, which is something not enough songs do. They just you don't need to show off, man. Just play the vocal line again.
I love guitar solos like that you can sing. For me, a benchmark of a great guitar solo is, can you sing it?
That's a good way of looking at it.
It does that classic thing of it just follows the vocal melody line, but it's so kind of, there's so much space in it.
It just doesn't show off or try and draw attention away from anything. No. It just adds another layer to it. My favorite solos are usually just like, okay, same sort of thing as you're saying, like you take the first half of the solo could just be the melody of the verse, and then twiddle away a little bit, like exaggerate it in the second half of it or something like that. I mean, this one doesn't do the second half, but it just needs to fit in with the song rather than be just some shred fest where, like, there's the one criticism I sometimes have about Slayer. I don't always, because it depends on my frame of mind. So I love, like, just the frantic mayhem of, like, a Slayer solo. But at the same time, it's just a selection of biddly, 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 biddly.
Yeah.
And just screechy notes, which is awesome. It adds to the chaos of the song, but it doesn't necessarily tell a story or add to the song from a storytelling perspective of it. But yeah, I suppose you can't really compare the two in that sense. So maybe strike that one from the record as well.
Yeah. I know, I think that's quite an interesting way of looking at it. Was Glen Campbell something you heard in the house growing up? Because songs like this were kind of omnipresent. I can't remember a time where I didn't know this song.
Same here. I don't think it was anything my parents were listening to. It's just one of those songs that is just always there. I don't know where you get it from, but...
What are the characteristics that you think make a great opening track? You know, what do you look for?
It's got to be like a big attention grabber to start with. It's got to be an attention grabber that also sets the tone for the rest of the album. Yeah, so I think it's always nice if it can then kind of set the scene for the whole album. Like, I'm a big fan of concept albums as well. So like if you can, but I suppose they're a bit different than like the standard opening track because they're telling a story throughout the whole thing. Mm. But I suppose if your opening track isn't something, the one I'm looking for is like something not necessarily big and bold, but it needs to set a tone and have a mood.
Track two, mate. What do you want to talk about?
2019's The Silent Man by Cult of Luna from the album Dawn to Fear. So this is a, it's like 10 minutes, 30 something. It's just like just sub 11 minutes, which I love. It's like the opening track of the album is nearly 11 minutes long. And I think there are like three or four tracks on the album, which are longer than it. So settle down for this album. Although I do think actually this could be like Cult of Luna's almost their most accessible song to new listeners, I think. They're a difficult band for a lot of people. It's exactly my taste, but I fully understand why others wouldn't be into it because the vocals are sparing, and when they do come in, they're just a roar of noise. They're almost like percussive rather than melodic because he doesn't really change his tone or inflection on it. It's just the length of a shout. They're all the same intensity with like, you know, just like a big monstrous roar each time, which I love. I think it's awesome. But it's just, I kind of think it adds another layer to each. It's almost like another instrument, but like more of a percussive one than like a melodic one. This is the this is the most recent one I've picked. Yeah, I mean, it's very recent. It came out in December 2019. Oh, it's just one of those songs that takes you so many places. Mm. It's got several songs in each one on that album, really. In fact, all their songs in general, actually, they are. Mm. They're about, you've got to have a lot of patience to listen to them. So if you're in for a quick fix, they are not the band for you. No. But yeah, one of my favourites of all time. Absolutely love it. I saw them on that tour as well when that came out. I saw them in the Electric Ballroom. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, had A.A. Williams and Brutus supporting them.
Really?
But that was one hell of a show. I mean, like, they played, as Pete usually, again, like, it's Cult of Luna. The gig was like an hour and a half long. They probably only played seven or eight songs. I'm probably not joking.
Like, no, I know. Yeah.
Dawn to Fear, like, it's like 80 minutes long and there's eight tracks on it. So there's a couple of short ones. There's a couple of like 5 minute songs in there. That's like, that's like, you know, the equivalent of a 2 minute punk song for Cult of Luna. That was just short, catchy, and fast paced.
That was their attempt at writing a single.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that, actually, this one was the single off that
album. Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. I remember seeing the video to it when it came out. If someone would come and ask you, where's a good entry point for Cult of Luna, it's probably this album, I think. I think so. In terms of, like, you know, someone going in cold. But it's so beautifully pummeling. It's like walking through treacle on ketamine. But I love those almost like jazz-like inflections that they bring in, especially on this song.
It's also got a beautiful big organ towards the end of it. Yeah. And also, like, it's amazing how like such a huge instrument like an organ can sound like, because it's during the quiet part. So, like, there's a real dip in the middle of the song where it, like, just goes chilled out with almost like, say, like, with almost like a jazz kind of drum beat in there. It's just like, well, almost sounds like brushwork with it.
Yeah.
And then that organ comes in, it's just like nice and slow, but then the organ's like, obviously it swells and it grows and it's just built to this massive crescendo.
It's the importance of an opening track as we first knew them when we were starting to, you know, obsess over music in our early teen years. Do you think the importance of the opening track, do you think that's something that's been lost in a digital age?
No, I don't think that actually how like albums are anymore is actually any different. So I think anyone wants to make like a proper album, it'll still be the same. I mean, you can always skip through it, but you can always move a needle on a record or anything. It's a bit harder to do.
You think there's still a place for them?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think that's ever going to change. There's enough people who are like love that as much, just it always continue. And I think, like I say, newer music and stuff just gets to like a harder rap and stuff like that. Like, I mean, there's still amazing stuff coming out. I mean, it's not like the one we just talking about, the Silent Man, was that only came out like just over a year ago, really. Mm. And that's made my list for today, for like my top five. So they're still out there. They may be just in different places, or maybe it's just the older boys who are making them. But there's still good stuff coming out. So I think as long as music exists, there'll still be good albums out there. You've got to have a good opener, because if you don't, no one's listening to your album.
No.
Partially because of how disposable it can be now, and how quickly it is to skip onto something else. If you're opening track shit, then people just go listen to something else. So if anything, perhaps openers are more important than ever.
Track three,
we have 2002's Alice by Tom Waits from the album Alice. If I'm going to pick one person who's like kind of like my all-time great for me, is Tom Waits. So yeah, it's tough to pick one because you've only got the opening tracks to pick from. So I'm not saying this is his best song, but I think it's the best opener of all of his albums.
Okay.
God, it's such a beautiful song. It's just like this noirish, dark, heavily textured, just absolutely beautiful. The piano in it, his voice is just right. He doesn't, because like a lot of that era, he just like tends to like do like almost like a Cookie Monsterish kind of shout.
Yeah,
he does loads of that. Whereas this one, he's just kind of singing with his incredibly well traveled voice, meaning that voice has been more places than any person ever probably will.
And, yeah.
I mean, if ever anyone complains about like the dangers and the hazards of smoking, everything, which are of course bad, but just remember, Tom Waits' voice wouldn't sound as good as it does on this without decades of smoking and drinking.
When I was doing my research on this track, because this is the kind of era of Tom Waits that I don't know as well. I'm not the biggest Tom Waits fan. I love Tom Waits. It's a little bit daunting in terms of like the back catalogue, because it's very kind of distinct kind of eras. With this, when I was doing my research, apparently the whole album was music written for an unproduced musical. It's a fucking dark subject matter, man, about like Lewis Carroll and his like almost paedophilic obsession with Alice.
It's weird, all that stuff. A lot of people will stand up for him and go, oh, we can't tell what his intentions were by constantly photographing these young girls.
And yeah, of course you can.
I think you can.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
you can make a good guess, at least.
It's, like,
yeah, you might not hold up in a court of law, but you're not going to ask him to babysit for you.
But it's, I love that juxtaposition, like you said, with that gorgeously kind of textured music with the kind of David Lynch like darkness of the lyrics, you know. But I mean, let's be honest, Tom Waits has made a career out of that, and he's a fucking master at it.
Oh, absolutely. I think he once like so famous, he said like he loves songs, like loves beautiful melodies telling him horrible things. I felt like, yes, well done. I probably messed that one up. It's something along those lines, but the sentiment is just something I absolutely love. I love something that's just beautiful and same, at the same time terrifying.
Yeah.
And that album really, the whole album encapsulates that really.
Mm. When were you introduced to Tom Waits? Can you remember?
I think he's just like one of those names I'd heard people mention, like with like such high regard. Like if you like read magazines and like artists I liked were into Tom Waits, but I had no idea. So I think I bought Swordfish Trombones from HMV in Milton Keynes, and then just like sat down and listened to it, and it starts off with a really weird, have you heard Singapore by him?
I love Singapore. Yeah, it's one of my favorite Tom Waits songs.
So that was the first one I heard, but like,
okay,
all right, this is what everyone's talking about. This is not what I was expecting. Like, so like, I went back, I thought I loved it instantly, thought like, I've never heard anything like this is mental, like this man's clearly insane. But then he also on that album has like so many like catchy songs that like, oh wow, there's like amazing like songwriting in there as well. And then like I would go and buy more of them, and like as you talked about, like he has like different eras, then I go back like buy some older stuff. Yeah. And then like the later stuff when he's, I don't know what you call him, insane? Something like that.
Yeah, beautifully insane.
Yeah, it becomes like a mad professor, a selection of strange instruments, but also with these like sort of punk sensibilities to some of it as well. And it's just, it's impossible to describe what, if someone to ask, oh, what's Tom Waits like? I never know how to answer that, because it depends on, again, which era, which album you're talking about, because they're all different. Like if you were to play him Alice, you'd think I guess you could go back and listen to his older stuff and you wouldn't be surprised by that. But then if you heard some of his later stuff or some of the things or saw of his trombones, you might be a bit confused. It's like, is that the same person? Yeah, I don't know, it's a nice sort of filled with variety, and that song is just, like I said, just so beautiful. It's haunting, is one of the main things I love about it. Like the saxophone over it.
Yeah.
With just like the beautiful like piano in the background. Everything's muffled, there's reverb, a bit of reverb on everything. Yeah. And it's just, it is like being haunted by a song. But a particularly beautiful ghost.
Yes. I just want to pick up on something you were talking about then, about you and me both coming from that era, pre-internet, pre-Spotify, and when music wasn't such a disposable thing. You know, as awesome as it is having everything at the touch of a button on your phone, it's incredible. Sometimes I do miss those times, or not necessarily miss those times, but kind of get a bit sad that, I don't know, kids of today, like you were saying, you're reading an interview with, I don't know, an artist that you respect or you really like, you know, and they start talking about Tom Waits, or they start talking about, I don't know, Nick Cave or someone like this, you know. So you go and check, you know, you go to your local music shop and you kind of take a punt. You take a bit of a risk, you know, or which one am I going to buy, you know. Cause
and you can only buy one or two, because, like, I didn't have the money back then, I'd say, you just got one.
Yeah, you know, you had your 10 quid or whatever, you know, you had money to buy one CD and you thought long and hard which one, and you went home and, like you say, you put it on and the first song you heard was Singapore and you're like, not what I was expecting. But because you kind of made an investment, music back then was an investment. By hook or by crook, you're going to damn well fucking like this album and you live with it and you listen to nothing else for like, whatever, you know, 2-3 months. And I just think sometimes with, you know, with music being that disposable thing where you're just like, nah, next, scrub, next. Will music have that kind of, I don't know, emotional and almost physical attachment to people in the future? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the one thing that's like, maybe either helped or at least slowed that happening is at least like, you know, it's like the big resurgence of vinyl, and it feels like vinyl's here to stay for a good long while at least. But yeah, it is definitely making people physically buy an album again. Like, physically buy, you look at it, because, well, it's like, you know, me and you, I know you love doing this. It's like, you know, you get an album, then, like, you basically spend the whole time examining every single thing inside the booklet. You look at all the pictures and you study them in detail.
You read the thank you list.
Exactly,
always.
I remember when I bought Run the Jewels 4 when I was in Newcastle, like, during one of the, like, the little gaps in lockdown. We, like, went there for a weekend.
Yeah.
And on the train on the way back, that's basically what I did for my train journey back. I just, like, sat there, right, here we go. Fold that open. Just had, like, a train seat with a table on it. Right, that's the full table. Nice. Sat there, and I just read everything in it, like, read every production credit. And I loved how detailed it was as well. Because there's every song, who did what on each song, who's, like, versus who's on it, who produced and played every instrument on every track, individually for every track. Like, yes, this is my this is my trip home sorted.
Nerd heaven. Nerd heaven, man. Even now, I know it's something that will never leave me. And it was nice to know, the older I got, when you start meeting like-minded individuals, like your good self, and it's like, oh, okay, it's not just me being weird and reading, obsessively reading all this shit. I'm not alone, you know. There's millions of us out there who do it.
It's the best thing. I just love it when a new one turns up, or you go out and get a new one, just sitting there, it's one of the funnest parts of having it. And there's also the added bonus that with vinyl is like, oh, what colour is the vinyl going to be? Is it just actually got a colour? Has it got a swirl? Is there some sort of fancy design in there? Have you got one that's only 500 copies because it's a record store day release, or just found in a bin that was just, they didn't sell on
record? Record store day is every day of the year. It's not just one day.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of it.
It's the one day. I like, it's the one day I don't buy anything.
No, I don't think I've ever bought one on record store day.
No,
I'm not
getting up at 2 a.m. or not going to sleep and standing outside a cold shop on Mill Road in the pissing down rain.
The day's bad in a way, because it kind of just like oh, you can't, can you, if you can't afford to listen to this, then you can't fucking have it. Because they're like, oh, we're going to charge double for this. Or like,
triple.
This is a limited record store release only day. And they're like, well, I'm not about that day. I'm at work or something, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't do that. Like, so what? So now I can't hear it. Like,
yeah.
I do understand, like, the fun of it being limited and everything, but it just feels like it's a money-making scheme rather than something special to you.
Yeah, it's for, like, I don't know, the privileged few who, A, can get the day off work, and B, have got like 300 quid's worth of disposable cash in their pocket just to go and spunk it on half a dozen things, you know? Music for me has always been an absolutely inclusive thing. Yeah. Everyone's welcome in this club, man. Let's sit around, put some tunes on and have a chat.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be about...
It's not a status thing or anything like you can like this and you can like that. Or it's everything's for everyone.
Yeah, no, completely. And
that's this, you know, like most of my friends I've met has been through music.
Track number four. Where are we going?
Okay, let's change direction a bit now. We're going to go for "Blow Your Trumpets, Gabriel" by Behemoth from the album The Satanist from 2014.
Bringing the metals.
Yeah. So I've got to let's go all out on this one. So this is fucking heavy, brutal, nasty, sacrilegious. This is one of my favourite ever albums.
okay.
Absolutely do it. If I had to like do a top 10 albums, this would be in it.
The floor is yours, mate, because this isn't my field at all. Or, you know, I know The Satanist. I listened to The Satanist when it came out because I was reliably informed by many people it was a benchmark for extreme music. I dug it, man, because, you know, it was Burzum meets fucking New Order meets Killing Joke with Miles Davis stuff in there. And I was like, okay, this is a bit of me.
It's just such a, it's just a brutal opening. I mean, the opening line of the album, like the song on the album, is "I saw the virgin's cunt spawning forth the snake." Like, right, strap in, lads. We're not holding back on this one.
No.
Bloody
no.
Hell. Like, yeah. That, and just from then, it's just the song and like the following album just has this terrifying, ominous sound to it. And it's just got this horns going on all the way through it. Like so many horns and a bit of strings in there. The strings are really sort of like far down in a bit. It just has this really like intense horn section throughout it. And it's just such a dark sounding song. And also one of the best things about this song is like, so at the end of it, so I'm skipping to the end here, but more songs need a big horn section playing discordant things with blast beats in the background. Because I don't think I can name too many horn ensembles with blast beats in the background. More of that, please, music.
Yeah, more of that.
There is an audience for that. It's this guy right here. I want more blast beats and horns at the same time.
I mean, it's that whole using the perspective of Satan as a critique of religion. And the whole, you know, like oppression and sexual physical restriction against women. This isn't Blink 182.
No, exactly. I mean, like I say, it's extreme metal. It's like, I think it's technically classed as Polish black metal.
Is that the subgenre? I'm sorry.
That is the subgenre.
That's the most elitist fucking thing I've ever heard you say. I think you'll find, Gaz, that it's Polish.
It is Polish metal. It's clearly. Were you listening? It's clearly Polish black metal. Although they're quite often like, especially because the album that they had after that, "I Loved You, Your Darkest." It's like now they've kind of been like branded as black metal for hipsters. It's more accessible than a lot of other black metal. Like despite like how extreme I'm making it sound, because to be honest, it is, but compared to a lot of other black metal, it's very accessible because it's quite catchy.
Yeah, it's catchy. There's melodies.
Yeah.
Unless it's got a hook or something that I can grab onto, it does just pass me by, and I haven't been many. I really liked Nile, Behemoth, especially this album, but my favorite was always Decapitated, because they had pop choruses.
Is there nothing wrong with having melody in it? Again, like, I'm not as elitist as I may sound on this one. I actually don't like, I get sometimes you'll get all
really,
like,
really.
Yeah, you get a lot of people who just really rag on a band for like, oh, they've sold out, or like, oh, they're well shit now. Like, what? Because there's a fucking melody. Like, you now notice they've got like, you know, a million more fans. Like, how has that made them shit? Yeah. Sometimes they may have just lost what they originally had, but I kind of feel that like Behemoth especially didn't lose anything by gaining that melody to their songs.
No.
If anything, it enhanced it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, you know, listen to the opening lyrics I just said. Like, they're not selling out. No one's playing that on Radio 1. Stick to your principles if you need to, and, you know, just make the music you want to make. And they clearly have done that. I mean, I'd say this is their masterpiece, really.
Universally acknowledged by even the press that aren't the metal press. Even the kind of, you know... I think it's been universally acknowledged, even in like the Mojo and Q world. Do you know what I mean? And uncut and things like that are like, yeah, this is an incredible piece of art.
That was amazing. Just how, I guess it's just, you know, it attributes it just how good it is. It's just because, yeah, it doesn't matter. It is one of those ones where even if you don't like it or like that style of music, you can at least appreciate that that is good songwriting.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. You may not like the constant blasphemy in it.
I've got no issue with that.
Currently in Poland, he's being he may go to prison for it.
Really?
Yeah, there's some like blasphemy laws he's broken in Poland. They're a bit like these draconian laws where he might actually end up in prison if he doesn't manage to get his way out of it. Yeah, not for this album, just for a separate incident. Apparently like I think he posted a picture on social media of like from a music video where he's got his boot on a picture of the Virgin Mary on the floor.
Is that it?
So he might go to prison for that. He's in The Guardian as well. He's even in The Guardian about it now, so.
Wow.
Because he started some campaign to get defence funds for it or something like that, for him and other artists in Poland who are being oppressed by these.
Yeah, I doubt he's the only one, but he will be the most high profile, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably why they're going to throw the book at him, because he just keeps on doing it. And he's not going to stop.
No.
I remember when I heard about it, the first time Nova been like, you know, accused of blasphemy. Well, he's almost certainly guilty.
And
I mean, the only issue is that's a crime.
Yeah, that's news. Yeah. So I thought everyone knew that.
Yeah, I mean, look at the song I've just picked. That's just one track.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a whole album of that shit. A whole career of that shit. That's the like album's called album.
The album's called The Satanist. Do you still enjoy listening to an album from start to finish? Is it something that you like to treat yourself to? I mean, you own a turntable.
Yeah.
Do you like that whole routine of, you know, picking an album, pulling the sleeve out, putting the needle down, sitting down, all of that, you know?
Well, especially when you get something new through. That's always the funnest one. But then it's still nice to go through those old classic, like, oh, what do I feel today?
Yeah.
And it's like, you just flick through them and like, oh, fuck yeah, I haven't had this in a while.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what am I in the mood for? Yeah, I know. And then just like quickly rummage through and you find
there it is.
That's the one.
What's the final track? Where are we going for your final track?
Final, let's like again shift gears to another one. I do love a different amount of genres in this. I can never, again, it's just, I listen to two definitely different types. I can't just pick one genre for it, despite the fact that would have made it way easier. I've gone for Mount the Air from the album of same name by The Unthanks in 2015. It's epic. It's beautiful. It's got it all. This song has it all. It's just incredible. It's another one. It's like 10 and a half minutes, 11 minutes, something like that. And just, I mean, who opens a folk album with a 10-minute song? Like,
when did a folk band ever get ideas so far above their station that they're like, you know what? I want us to be Sigur Rós.
I can't name another sort of folk band that's ever done it, actually, that I can think. There must be some that have, I'm sure, but I haven't heard them. And I'd love to.
There's drone stuff on the album.
Oh,
the out-of-the-box thinking that they've done on this album is just incredible.
It's just an album far above what people in folk music were doing. It's just pushing everything to the limit. But it doesn't lose anything in the process.
No.
That's what's so impressive about it. Like, you've got all the sort of, like, the beautiful, like a pair of sisters that do the vocals for it.
Yeah.
You can also hear their accents shining through beautifully as well. I love it when you can hear people's accents. Because normally there's just, like, everyone's American, or in folk music, everyone sort of tries to be a bit Irish, even if they're not. Like, you do get a lot of that. So it's like American Irish or some English, but they've got, I think they're Geordies, or they're from that neck of the woods.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
And it's just got, I just love hearing, like, the twang of an accent, which means you're actually singing with your own voice, and it's, like, coming through as it's supposed to. And as they're, you get this a lot with, like, sort of sibling duos, when they sing close harmonies, it just seems to work so well.
Yeah.
It's incredible, just like, it's another one of those songs which goes so many different places.
Mm-hmm.
It's touching, it's sort of epically soaring at some times, because you can start, it starts off almost, like, very melancholic, like a real sort of touch of sadness towards it, but by the end of the song it's reached this big sort of sweeping thing when they're going to mount the air on swallow's wings and so on. Like, it's just and it's just rising as, like, the orchestral sort of accompaniment they've got to it comes up, and
it's just that intro and when the trumpet kicks in. First time I heard it absolutely floored me. Again, the kind of jazz inflections, but a lot of it's almost late period kind of talk, the Spirit of Eden kind of era talk, that's my favourite era of talk, and those almost languid John Martin-esque vibes. I don't know if you've heard any John Martin.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, you'd love him, like early 70s kind of British folk.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
But gnarly, you know, drug taking, womanizing, didn't give a fuck. You'd love it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Right.
Any man that's basically a wreck will do good stuff.
Yeah. You know, I mean, where did you first hear of these? This duo? I mean,
a mate of mine, Rob Hurst, sent it to me when we were working together at one point for a digital media company. We were just messaging each other music over Spotify, like, oh, have you heard this lot? Have you heard this lot? So he just sent me that. I sat there for like 10 minutes and just like kind of ignored my phone while it was going off. I was like, this is amazing. So listened to that and then just went online and bought it straight away because I needed that in my life immediately. Yeah. Did I buy online? I might have bought it from Relevant.
I need to get this on vinyl, I must admit. I mean, the first time I heard it was they did an incredible live version of this song at the Folk Awards, Radio 2 Folk Awards. Yeah, edited, more succinct. It was like, you know, 4.5 minutes.
Oh yeah, I think there is like a single version of it.
But... Yeah. But yeah, I love folk music. Obviously, I know you do as well. But as awesome as folk music is, so much of it is so safe.
Yeah.
And it, almost cookie cutter. You know what's going to happen, where it's going to go, what it's going to sound like, which is fine some of the time. But when people like this come out and push folk music into places where it's never ever been before.
Yeah, well, why can't
and opening up kind of folk fans' minds to all this other amazing music, you know, you're getting them into, I don't know, Sigur Rós or kind of later period Mogwai or, you know, Portishead or even jazz
music or something. Like, just listen, like, you know, because, like, as you said, there are a lot of jazz inflections in that one as well. Like, just maybe you need to be listening to some jazz music as well. One of the great things about jazz is that there isn't this sort of, you know, it famously doesn't have that sort of set structure. Like, oh, but it's got, here's your verse, chorus, bridge, middle, eight. Like, you don't have to structure songs this way. This is one of the things I really, it annoys me a lot in songwriting is that everyone too definitively like follows the same structure of songwriting
blueprint.
You don't have to. Some of the best stuff doesn't. Like, look at Nick Cave, for example. Look at Stag Elite. It's one riff, it's a story over one riff, and that's like incredible. Like, and there's so many of those. He loves seem to do that more of, there's more and more as time goes on, less interested in traditional song structures. And that's like saying another thing like about Cold Luna earlier that I didn't mention. Like, they're pieces, not necessarily songs. There are recurring hooks. That's cool, but you don't have to be, like, say about folk music, you don't have to be just, you go A, B, A, B, C, A, B, C. Like, you don't have to follow that formula, because I completely agree with you. Too much of it is the same. I want those who dare to be different.
I'm more than happy to have an honourable failure and someone tries something, someone, you know, reaches for the stars and it fucks up. Cool, man. That's going to happen, you know, in the pursuit of great art. I mean, it's a time and a place for it, you know, but I think your list certainly typifies a lot of that kind of out of the box thinking and being, there's nothing kind of linear.
No, yeah, I guess it's kind of like my telling of my sort of preference in songs, I suppose. Really. Like, you know, like I say, like, I nearly put Six on there, which is, we've had a lot to chat about with Six by Manson.
Yeah, blimey, yeah.
It's like just one of the most impressive albums ever made, but it's, again, all over the place. They don't give a shit about song structures on that one.
When, God, Six, there's like 15 different song ideas and they've just put them all into like 1 6-minute song.
As you say, it's not to say I don't love the other stuff as well, like, you know, my favourite songs are actually of that same structure of, like, you know, verse, chorus, and so on.
Yeah.
They're some of the best songs of all time, but don't limit yourself to just that.
I think that's a great way to finish, mate. Booms, that's been fucking incredible. Thank you so much, mate.
Thank you for having me, man. I've really enjoyed that. It's been awesome.
And there we go. One absolute dude. Cheers, Mark, for the awesome catch-up and also taking the time out to guest and picking some incredible tunes. And I hope you all enjoyed it out there. And who knows, maybe you've discovered your new musical obsession. So please take care of yourselves. And I'll see you all on the flip side. Adios.
I'm feeling kind of basic today. Top five side ones, track ones.
You've been listening to the Track One Side One podcast with me, Gaz Jones. Give us a follow on all the social medias at Track One Side One Podcast to keep fully up to date with all future episodes and guests, where there will also be links to Spotify playlists that will accompany each show. So please check them out. And I'll see you soon.